Hi, I'm Larry Reedy, and welcome back, or welcome for the first time, to my podcast, Larry Reedy's America. Very special guest today. It's going to be an informative interview. This is a teacher of 37 years experience, and she has not been a normal teacher. She's traveled the world. We're going to talk about different cultures. And also, this happens to be my daughter, Julie. So, Julie, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And let's start off today with your early life. And let's get back to where you were born, grade school, high school, and also your first international experiences, I know, occurred in high school. And right. Let's talk about all that. So
sure.
go ahead and take okay. it away.
Well, I was born in Cincinnati, and I attended St. Antoninus Grade School through seventh grade. And then after that, you and Mom moved us all to Batesville, Indiana, where I went to St. Louis Grade School for a year. And then I started at Oldenburg Academy, which was formerly known as the Immaculate Conception Academy.
Well, one thing I do want to ask you.
Yes.
In grade school, what did you want to do when you grew up?
Great question. I don't think I really knew. I was pretty open to everything. You know, of course, Mom was a nurse, so that was always on the table. But I was able to take a lunchtime program in seventh grade, and we learned a little Spanish, and I loved it. So I had in the back of my mind something with languages.
Okay. You know, your sister Donna, when she was little, wanted to be a fairy godmother.
I know. And she is with her four boys.
So in high school, is that when you started thinking about teaching?
A little bit. Again, I knew I wanted to do something with languages, Spanish in particular. My freshman year, we had a presentation in Oldenburg's auditorium, and there was a senior who had participated in IU Honors Program for high school students, and I was hooked. She got to go to Mexico and study and speak Spanish for 6.5-7 weeks with the IU Honors Program. And from that moment, I really wanted to do that. So I loved Spanish. Sister Carmen was my teacher. She was incredible. And she started talking early on about the IU Honors Program. So my junior year, I applied. We had first a written test, and students from all over Indiana competed for 30 spots. I passed the test part, and then we went on to interviews and recommendations. So fortunately, I was invited to participate, and I got to study in San Luis Potosí, Mexico, for 6 weeks. The rule was, if you spoke any English during that 6 weeks, they could send you home at your parents' expense. And people who know me know that I'm pretty much a rule follower. So I was determined I was not going to break that rule. I didn't want to get sent home. I love the experience. And I, for the most part, except maybe one time when I was sick, I spoke Spanish for 6 weeks. And as incredible a teacher as Sister Carmen was, I improved in those 6 weeks my spoken Spanish so much. I knew I wanted others to have similar experiences.
Was it anything to do with the dialect or just the knowledge?
Sister Carmen was Cuban, and, you know, so Mexican Spanish is a little different, but I will say the first night we arrived, and I did not know the other 29 participants. I was the only one from Oldenburg that year. But when we arrived, we were kind of thrown into this new family. And they told me right away, you know, there's a drought, we don't have any water, so you won't be able to take a shower. And I had not traveled out of the country before, and it was a long day of flying. So when we got home, I asked in my very basic Spanish, may I take a shower? And they just looked at me, and I knew that I had missed something. So the first few days were rough. I was homesick, and so the language barrier was a challenge. But after a week, it was very easy. I just started thinking in Spanish, and I think the second week I started dreaming in Spanish. And that's really when you know that you're living in the language.
Okay. Now, how about the Nogales experience?
Okay, so that was later. So I went to the Indiana University. I started out as a Spanish and psychology major, and I switched majors several times until I did end up with the education in Spanish. And so when I did my student teaching, I didn't get to do any study abroads, which I would recommend to any students, current students thinking about what you want out of your college career, if that's the path you go. I would highly recommend studying abroad. So many of my students have done it. They've come back and talked to me about their experience, and they've loved it. It truly changes your life to do some kind of an international experience. But my experience as a student teacher, again, through Indiana University, was a program where you were able to earn graduate credit and complete your student teaching. And back in the day, in the 80s, student teaching was a lot different. There was, I believe, only an 8-week requirement, but I chose the semester route. So I chose a program where I got to go to Nogales, Arizona, right on the border of Nogales, Mexico. And part of the program was 6 weeks with some kind of an agency. And I chose a home health care agency where we visited families, clients, mostly bilingual, who were in situations where they needed some kind of home health care. And that was really eye-opening, fascinating, because we saw people who in some cases did not have running water, in other cases had beautiful, luxurious homes, but were elderly and needed some kind of assistance from a home health care nurse. So that was wonderful. And then I did my student teaching at Nogales High School, which was huge. I believe it was 2,500 students, and again, on the border. So the background of the people, mostly Mexican-Americans, but not all. And so there was a lot of Spanish spoken, but not necessarily, the formal Spanish. We would probably have said a lot of Spanglish, because the students were speaking both Spanish and English at home, and sometimes the words were combinations of Spanish and English. So it was a wonderful experience.
And didn't you stay with a Mexican-American family?
I did. My part of the program at IU was they helped you find housing. And one of the families that housed students was a family. He was born in the United States, and I believe she was born in Mexico. And they lived in Nogales, about 4 blocks from the border. So they had 6 children, and I got to meet probably 5 of them. They were adult children by then, and they were a wonderful couple. We stayed in touch for a long time. In fact, I got to see them again. Part of my honeymoon surprise was a trip to Nogales from my husband, and it was wonderful to see them again. We exchanged Christmas cards for many years, and they both passed since then, but yeah. It was a wonderful experience. We spoke Spanish because she was more comfortable speaking Spanish. We also were able to walk across the border. So you got to remember, this is the late 80s. We didn't have to bring an ID. We just had to say U.S. citizen when we came back.
Okay. Well, after graduation, IU, what happened then after graduation?
The first year, I decided to stay in Bloomington because I wanted to get a few more graduate credits and also work on my English minor. So when I graduated, I had a major in Spanish and also in education. So my degree is education and Spanish. But I was very close to an English minor, so I found a part-time job at Bloomington High School South, another large high school, I believe 2,000 students there. So I worked part-time and did some classes, and I got to stay in Bloomington one more year, which I loved. I love Bloomington, Indiana.
Okay, now let's get into your family life, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to go to some of your international experiences, one country by country, because I know the culture is totally different everywhere,
right.
And also on the students that come here. So go ahead and talk about your family life.
So my family life, after college, I got married to Carrie, and we lived in, I worked one more year in Oldenburg once we were married. So I did that commute from Oldenburg to Cincinnati, and then...
You mean when you were teaching at Oldenburg?
When I was teaching, sorry, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So after Bloomington High School South, I got a job at my alma mater, Oldenburg Academy, and I worked there for 3 years. The first 2 years, I actually moved back home and saved some money, and then between my second and third year at Oldenburg teaching, I married Carrie and moved to his apartment in Fairfield in Cincinnati and made the commute. And then after that, I didn't want to keep doing that commute, so I started at my current position at a girls' school in Cincinnati, and I've been there. This is my 33rd year, I believe, maybe 32nd, 33rd year. I've just started teaching there. And in between there, sometime we had our son. And he's about to turn 25. Yeah. Time flies.
Okay. We're going to take a little break and be right back, have a drink of water, collect our thoughts, and have a little music to listen to. Okay, we're back now, and Julie, our next phase of this interview, we want to talk about your great experiences with the student, international student travel back and forth, and let's start it out with your first experience.
My first experience... was not actually an exchange. My first experiences with students internationally were tours. I was able to find a good travel agency that did student trips, and my first one was to Mexico, and I believe that was my first year teaching in Cincinnati. And we did a spring break trip to Mexico, and I believe we had 7 or 8 students. And it was a lot of fun because the company, the educational touring company, arranged for us to see some awesome things in Mexico City. And then we ended up in Puerto Vallarta, where we had some beach time and lots of educational tours. So it was a nice combination of touring and learning. And then that same year, I took a larger group to Spain, and we went all over Spain. And I believe I did tours of Spain three times and in the 90s. And then a little bit later, in Cincinnati, my high school was approached by a friend from another high school who had started an exchange in Zaragoza, Spain. And they started small with just a couple students, and they wanted to expand the program. So I've been working with friends from Spain and other high schools for several years. And what's evolved is that we have true exchanges. So our first exchange was with a school in Spain. Zaragoza is the name of the city. And it's also a Catholic school. And we started sending three students for an exchange for 3 weeks. So the students would go and live with a family that we had paired them with for about 3 weeks, our first few years. And then the students would come back about 6 months later and stay with their families, our students who had gone to Spain, for, again, about 3 weeks. And we realized that the students were just getting comfortable speaking the target language, either Spain for our students or English for the students from Spain. So we decided to expand, and now we're at, for our program with Spain, we're at a 5-week exchange. Typically, our students will travel to Spain and stay for 5 weeks with the family. They attend classes, and they really become part of that host family for the 5 weeks. Then they continue communicating via social media, and then the following school year, those students from Spain that had hosted are now our guests, and they come to classes at our school in Cincinnati. They become part of the family that hosts them, and you know, we really try to get them to speak as much of the target language as they can, but it's hard when you're in classes with students, other students from your home school. But it's really been an awesome program. Students have had great experiences. We did have to suspend the program for our original program with Spain for about a year with the pandemic, but we did keep in touch, of course. And that's a very popular program. I've made very close friends throughout the year, and one of the benefits for me as a coordinator is that I do have some friends that have visited us. They often stay in my home with my family, and so finally this summer, I was able to convince Carrie to travel to Spain with me. And we, as a belated graduation gift, we took our son, and we got to see so many of the people that we had hosted through the years, people we had been able to spend time with here, and now we were able to spend time in Spain with them, and it was just an incredible experience.
Well, and you've bonded quite a bit with the Spanish teachers from over there.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So they're like family. Many of them have been out here to Batesville, and recently I took some students to Oldenburg on their spring break. This year, the program looked a little different. We had to change our timeline a little bit, but you know, they've been all over. 1 year we had some students go to Indianapolis to visit one of my sisters. My other sister, she's gone places with us too. So it's really been families.
What's the major difference in the culture of the U.S. and Spain?
You know, it's hard to say the major difference because I think people are people, you know, and one thing I've emphasized since I began teaching is, you know, we really need to focus on celebrating and appreciating the differences and the similarities. So, you know, the teenagers, I would say, focus on the big difference in fashion. So we're getting ready to send 5 students over from my school in January, and we had a meeting with the current visiting students from Spain, and they prepared a PowerPoint and some advice, and our students from our school and the students from Spain spoke to these girls who are planning to go in January. And one thing they said is, the style, the fashion is so different. You do not wear sweats out in public. You don't wear joggers out in
Whoa.
Public. So, you know, it's dressier. You wear jeans. Even if you're going to the supermarket, you wear jeans. You don't wear sweatpants. And so they tend to focus on things like that. They want to fit in, of course. So they had a really nice presentation about this is what you wear, this is what you don't wear. But, you know, people are people. I would say just respecting people is the universal value that we try to convey. Some of the notable things are, you know, of course, the different meal times. That one is true for anyone, no matter how old you are. When my family, we traveled with some students through a different program that I can talk about, but we arrived in Spain. It was a long day, a long overnight, and I had a message from the parent of one of the Spanish students who said, we'd like to take you and your family out to dinner. We'll meet at this restaurant at 9:00. And, you know, Carrie was kind of shocked by that, did not want to do it because he was exhausted. And if you know my husband, he's tall, he has long legs, and he was very uncomfortable for that flight, the second flight especially, because it was about a 7-hour flight, I believe. And so he just wanted to sleep, relax, but he agreed to go out, and, you know, we got back to our hotel about midnight. Because another thing, a cultural thing, is when you go out to eat, it's not about the food. It's an event. It's sharing stories. It's being with people. And the food is secondary. Yeah. So a big difference, too.
Well, the one thing that I remember, one of the teachers said that when they stopped at McDonald's, she said, I'll have a Big Mac and a Corona.
So in Spain, when you go to McDonald's, you can order a beer. And they've been, and this has happened several times, the adults that I work with, when we go to McDonald's, which we try not to do, but if there's nothing else open, we will go to McDonald's, and they order beer, and I usually forget to tell them, but it's kind of funny anyway. So, and especially with the accent, sometimes the workers at McDonald's will say, what? Bear? No. And then I explain that we don't serve alcohol at McDonald's in the U.S.
Okay. Next country.
Okay. So we start with Spain, and then we didn't want our French students to miss out. So I talked to my friends at the school in Spain, and they had a program. They had several exchange programs, and they did have a partner school in France. So they connected me with the coordinators in France, and we started our second exchange with France. And that's still at about a 3-week program, mostly because that's what the other school is comfortable with. We do a 3-week exchange, similar, different timelines, but it's still 3 weeks for our students and 3 weeks for the French students at each school. And usually the hosting and the traveling are the same school year, whereas the program with Spain, we start in January of one school year, and then the second part of the exchange is the September of the second school year.
Now, and what city in France?
It's a smaller city called Belfort, and I love the city because it's actually on the border of Germany and Switzerland, too. So usually our students on their weekends with their families get to go into Switzerland or go into Germany. And, you know, it's great. And I've been fortunate to be the chaperone for two of our French exchanges. And there is a high-speed train station walking distance from the school where we stay. And so my fellow chaperone and I, each time we've walked to the train station, and when we're not on duty with the students, we do a little day trip to different cities in France, and it's incredible.
Well, for our listeners who, including me, not being ever exposed to a high-speed train, what speeds were you traveling?
Good question. I'd have to double check, but it's over 200 miles an hour.
And smooth?
Very smooth. Yeah. You don't even feel like you're on a train.
Yeah. I watched a film on, I believe it was Smithsonian, and the work that goes into these high-speed trains to keep everybody where their coffee's not going to shake or anything. It's just incredible.
Yeah. It's a great experience. And you know, that's another thing I love about Zaragoza in Spain is you can get to anywhere in Spain in a reasonable amount of time. So Zaragoza is between Barcelona and Madrid. And so, you know, in less than 2 hours, you can be in Madrid or Barcelona. And so you can actually do a day trip to these major, beautiful cities.
Wow, that's neat. So in France.
In France, yes.
Major cultural difference.
Again, the timelines for meals are different.
Plus the extent of time that they take for a meal.
Yes, yes. So the, you know, the big meals are midday and not at night. And, you know, people say, oh, the French are rude. And I would say that's not true. It's just a different approach. We would tend to, for example, in teaching high school students, maybe I'm more aware of this, but people say, oh, I love your outfit. That's really nice. Where did you get it? And in Europe, they wouldn't think of saying that. And we just think it's friendly. And our students will sometimes look at it, our visiting students will look at that the other students and think that's a very odd question. But by the end of the stay, they're saying the same things.
Well, you know, with your mother and I, when we were in Europe and spent some time in Paris, I always thought the Paris people were a little standoffish to start with. But and I know you've heard the story, but I went to the Paris Motorcycle Show. Your mother and some ladies went to the Louvre. And when I left the motorcycle show in Paris, I found a nice little pub, a lot of traffic, outdoor seating, and I walked in, everybody was speaking French, and I went up to order a Kronenbourg 1664, which is a French beer, and I just had some francs in my hand, and the bartender was speaking French to me, and I said, here, take what you need, just don't cheat me too much. And she started laughing. Everybody started laughing. They all start speaking English, and they bought me two beers. So my experience was pretty fun there.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think one thing, too, is that in Europe, we tend to assume everybody's going to speak English just because that's part of our culture, and we expect people to speak English. But when you're visiting another country, you know, the major cities, you're going to be fine. But some of the smaller towns, you're going to find that not everybody speaks English. And I would say most people appreciate an effort. So what I tell my students is, even if you don't know the words or if you're not sure, try. And people really do appreciate that effort to speak the language of the country.
Well, or go to your iPhone and go to Translator.
Yes. things have changed a lot since I first traveled.
Okay. Next country.
So after France, we wanted to extend some more experiences for our Spanish students because, you know, Spanish is by far the most popular language at most high schools. And we had to be selective with our program with Spain. We could only take 5 students each year. So we started a partnership with a school in Santiago, Chile. And we started it in 2016, I believe. And it was sort of just by coincidence that we had a student who reached out to me and said, I'd like to attend your school because I'm going to be visiting my aunt in January, in the summer. And, of course, you know, on the other side of the equator, they were in summer in Chile when we were in winter. So I talked to my principal, and she thought that would be a great idea. And we worked out that the student could attend classes. And while she was at school, we got to be very, very close. She was a wonderful girl. And I said, what do you think about starting an exchange with your high school? Do you think there's a teacher there that would work with me? And she said, oh my gosh, I wanted to ask you if we could do that. So she gave me some contact information from some of her teachers, and we started an exchange with Chile. And the nice thing about that program is the students who maybe were in their seasons for athletics weren't able to participate in the first Spanish exchange with Spain because you know they were practicing or they were playing sports or for whatever reason, maybe they just didn't want to miss that much school. So we started a program where our students would go in June and the students from Chile would come here and study in January. And so that's been a really good program. Unfortunately, when we were just really getting strong in that, the pandemic hit, and we had to suspend that program for a while. So we're trying to get it started up again and get to send some students over this summer.
How about the difference in the dialect in Spain and Chile?
Yes, so every country, every Spanish-speaking country is going to be different. The notable difference in pronunciation between Spain and or Spain and the other Spanish-speaking countries is the theta. So a word like Zaragoza with some Z's in it, the Z is pronounced TH. And, you know, so it's very different. It takes a while to get used to. And when the students here come from Spain and they hear, you know, sometimes they're in a Spanish class with their U.S. sister, and they hear some of our recordings from our online book series, they kind of laugh because it's definitely a Latin American Spanish. And, you know, so it's an adjustment, and the vocabulary is different. It's very similar to if you were to go over to England, for example, and just there are different words, there's different pronunciations. So it does take wherever you travel for any of our Spanish students or speakers, it's an adjustment to get used to that country's speech.
Well, it's funny, when I was in the Army in the Canal Zone, I had a lot of friends. Some guys on the baseball team that I played for, they were Puerto Rican, and we had Mexican-Americans. And Puerto Ricans, if they were talking in Spanish, they'd get real excited. And I can remember a buddy of mine, Frank Garcia, was from California, talking to this other guy. And they were speaking Spanish, and Frank said, I don't know what language you're speaking. Can you either slow down or can you just speak English? Because I can't understand a word you're saying.
That's funny. I had a similar conversation with my newest friends from Spain, were the chaperones, just in September, this past exchange, which will be wrapping up in a week. And they were telling a story about speaking to some people they had met from a Latin American country, and they said they couldn't understand them. It took a long time to get used to that difference. So even native speakers of Spanish have some challenges.
Well, now, one that I'm really interested in is Japan.
Ah, yes. So Japan has become very, very popular. We do not teach Japanese at my school, so we have a Japanese exchange that's a cultural exchange. And just backing up a little, the way that got started is, you know, after having these three exchanges, I talked to my principal again, and we decided it would be nice to exchange with another school that's the same religious affiliation, the specific order that my school is associated with. So the Order of Sisters actually has a school in Japan. So in the summer of 2018, I was able to travel with some other people from my school, the principal, the president, and we went to a seminar for the order, the religious order, the Catholic Sisters, and it was an international convention. And one of the seminars was about international experiences and exchanges. So we made sure I was signed up for that, and I got to meet the principal of this school, actually two principals, and they were wonderful. One was a sister, and the other was a layperson, and we worked with them to start an exchange with a school in Niigata, Japan. And it's very unusual. You can imagine there aren't too many Catholics in Japan and only a few Catholic schools. So this is a Catholic girls' school in Japan. And we started talking about dates and times, and it just came together really nicely. The first year would have been the 2018-2019 school year. We did a cultural pen pal exchange. We weren't ready to jump right in and do the travel. So we did a pen pal exchange with this school, the Seishin Girls' School in Japan. And it was very popular, one of our most popular clubs. And the second year, then, we were ready to do the travel. So we worked really hard. We had officers from our club, student officers, help organize the trip. And we were able to go to Japan in the end of January of 2020, and we stayed for 2 weeks. And this was unusual in a couple ways. It's our shortest exchange. It was our shortest exchange of only 2 weeks, and the chaperones were able to stay the whole time. And fortunately, as the coordinator of the international programs at my school, I was one of the chaperones. Now, I don't speak Japanese, so the second chaperone was about the same age as my son, actually, a new counselor at the school. And she studied Japanese at the University of Cincinnati for 2 years and has a great love for the Japanese culture and the Japanese language. So she and I were co-moderators of our Japanese culture club. And so the second year that the club was in existence, she and I worked with the students to organize this exchange. And we were there for 2 weeks, and we lived in what was a dorm in Japan. It was amazing. The only drawback was, because it hadn't been used in a while, there was no central heat. So we had kerosene heaters in the room. So that part wasn't the greatest, but, you know, you could see your breath in the hallways. But it was well worth it. And amazing school, amazing people. I will say that the reaction of the girls when our students went to class was very different. When the students walked by, I think there was some apprehension on the part of the Japanese students and families, because nobody signed up to host any of the students. It's just not a typical thing. So the first day of classes, the Japanese students would see the students from the U.S. and they would just stare and then they'd giggle. And the second day it was almost like they were asking for autographs. They were like rock stars. It was really great. And our students formed such great friendships there. It was wonderful. So, of course, our plan was for the Japanese students to come and stay with us, but the pandemic hit just at the wrong time.
Did you enjoy the food?
I did. It was very different from, you know, the European exchanges or the South American exchange, but I really liked it.
And how about did you get to ride their bullet train?
We did. We rode it from Niigata to Tokyo.
Yeah.
We did have a little hitch going over. We had a pretty tight connection, and unfortunately, we missed that connection in Toronto. So we flew from CVG to Toronto to go to Tokyo, and we missed that connection. But the airline was great. They put us up in a very nice hotel, got us to the hotel and back to the airport. And the students especially were so disappointed because we had a trip planned for that first day. We were going to spend the whole day in Tokyo, and we had bought tickets to the Ghibli Museum, which is sort of the Japanese Disney, and a lot of our students are into anime, and they were very disappointed. So that was probably the most disappointing thing of the trip. We missed our first day in Tokyo. So we rearranged things. So we had a day in Tokyo. Our last day was actually Valentine's Day. And it's the longest Valentine's Day ever because Japan is 13 hours ahead of us. So we spent the whole day, February 14th, in Tokyo. And then traveling back, we got, even though it was a very long trip back, we still got back to Cincinnati on Valentine's Day.
Well, during your stay over there, Japan has a reputation of being so clean that it's unbelievable that you never see any trash on the sidewalk? Or is this true?
Yes. It was very clean. Different to one of the cultural things is a little more reserved in public. You don't yell. There's a different attitude. It's not about the individual so much as the good of the group. So we did spend a lot of time in preparing our students in, you know, don't get on a tram or a train and start yelling to your friends. Respect everybody's space. It was a great experience, though.
And from what I remember, the bullet train over there goes 275 miles an hour.
That's quite possible.
Okay. How about some advice for the younger generation pursuing teaching? I mean, I know there's a lot of opportunity around, but I don't know if anything could be more gratifying than teaching kids how to enter into an adult life.
Yeah, I would say if you have any kind of passion for sharing knowledge, for being around young people and you know, just seeing, it's so rewarding to see them grow in any kind of way, whether it be in your discipline. I love seeing this progress that my students make in Spanish, but just also as people. You know, I have a student I'm thinking of. Her first year, the first year I met her, she talked really softly, and she's very shy and withdrawn, and she's so open. I don't know, it's wonderful to see that transformation, that she really has gained so much confidence. And I think her high school experience, I would say, is a big part of that, and just the people around her. You know, I work for a school where I think there's a lot of affirmation. The students are able to be themselves. So I would say, think about that. And maybe some more just practical advice too is think about if you're going into high school to have a second area of expertise. So, you know, I really love teaching Spanish, but I am certified to teach English. So if it, my career wouldn't have evolved like it did, and I feel very grateful that I'm still able to teach Spanish half of my working time, but the other time, the other half, I coordinate our international experiences. But if I couldn't do that at a different school, maybe if Spanish wasn't as popular, if it weren't so popular, and I needed to do something else, I have English that I could also teach, which I love, but Spanish really is my passion.
Okay. So what is your game plan, you and Carrie, in the near or the distant future?
Right now, I'm just kind of taking it year by year. I still love what I do. I still feel like I have a lot more to do. So I don't have any retirement plans per se. You know, I think in a perfect world, maybe I would be working part-time and enjoying more family time and travel time. But right now, I won't, there are some things I want to develop. We started an international study program. So last year, we had 6 students from our partner school in Zaragoza, 6 students who studied the full year as fully enrolled students at my school. So they earned high school credit. They had to do all the things that our students have to do. They had to take the hard test and in a language that wasn't their first language. This year we have 2 students doing the same thing from Zaragoza. So I'd like to continue that. I feel like there's a lot more to do.
Okay. Well, with you busy in your school year right now, if any of our listeners have any questions to ask you, why don't I have them send me the comment at LarryReedy@mac.com.
Yes.
And if you have the answer, you can pass it on to me and I can get back
Absolutely.
To
you. Absolutely. I'd love that.
I think it's about time to wrap it up. We've gabbed quite a bit, and we're about on about 48 minutes into the podcast here. So I think I want to thank everybody for listening and thank Julie for being a terrific guest and a bevy of information. And as I've said in the past, faith, family, country, friends, everything else is background music. And I think right now it's about time to sign off. And may God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. And we'll talk on the next podcast. Thanks again.